Would anyone like to ask or say or share anything?
I'd like to ask about the silence. Does that also include body gestures, eye contact? Should we also avoid making contact with any kind of contact?
So the question is about the silence, not just about words, but in other kinds of communication, if we're trying to avoid any kind of contact or communication through eye contact or body gesture. So there's such a range of communication. Most of our communication is nonverbal. If we talk about body, like certainly we want people to feel that they have their physical space, that we're not going to be touching each other these 6 days. It could be really cool to sometime do a retreat where we have massage and even like play wrestling as part of that. And I'm not joking, but we're not doing that this time. All those other many kinds of ways of keeping company, being in the same space, we leave that unsigned. Like, what feels silent to you? So sometimes it's really great to have a sense of a more complete and literal seclusion, where you're really actually not making eye contact with people. You're kind of going into your own world. Sometimes that's really fruitful, and sometimes it isn't. So it's good to know that that's an option. Maybe if you tend to be really, you find yourself very dependent on outside confirmation and reassurance that you're okay, it could be an interesting fast to go on, that you're not looking for someone to smile at you so that you feel allowed to be here. I don't like to make it a rule. And sometimes out of silence, it just happens, a smile together, and it's the cream of the retreat, and we don't want to take that away. And sometimes the cream of the retreat is, I remember retreats where people seem to know each other at the end of the 10 days, and I was like, I know a few people's shoes, and that's about it. And it was good. In some of the Buddhist texts and also elsewhere, there's this description. It's not really a recommendation. Sometimes it's a recommendation, but also a description of how it often goes for someone to go towards the deep. And it often begins with what they call seclusion, which is kind of having an easier situation to practice in that's less demanding, it's less triggering the sense of demand. And we're going to be talking about conditions today, too. So feeling here, instead of me saying, these are the conditions that are good for you, follow them, we're saying this silence is usually more often good than not for a certain amount of time. And since we all agreed to come, hopefully you agree that feels true to you. But then what? We leave that very open. So we'll be giving lots of instructions, lots of different techniques that you can choose from, but we're not going to be up here saying, do this one thing all the time and then you'll be fine. We're actually saying, try to feel what is your path and it will be messy, is actually more what we're saying. And you're okay anyway, already. Any other question or anything to share? Yes, please.
What's your recommendation about writing?
Yeah, okay, about writing. What's your normal habit or practice with writing? Off retreat. Off of retreat. Okay. So I'll try, It's it feels simple to me, and I'll try to. I don't know if I can put it into simple words, though. We would want you to feel free that if something kind of comes up, that it feels like it would be kind of honoring life to just write it down and keep. If it feels like a gesture of honoring in some way, or discovering, if it's part of a discovering process, it could be a good thing. And the same person, the same day, the same notebook, the same pen could be another thing that's going on where I'm not, it's not so much an honoring or part of a process of discovering where the element of writing is a necessary ingredient. It could be that the writing is added on top, almost to distance myself from the process that's going on. To kind of, I'm afraid I'm going to forget it, so I've got to write it down, recording rather than as part of a discovery. And I wouldn't want you to be sitting here kind of like, is this discovering or recording? Oh my God. So often in Dharma talks, people often might take some notes, and you can feel in yourself when it starts to get forced or when it feels really fluid or it feels important to you, you want to, and you genuinely just want to, and you do. And when it feels more addictive or habitual, and or more coming from fear. So if someone would feel like lots of writing would be important, then that's also another situation which could happen. It has happened sometimes that on a silent retreat, it seemed to the teachers and the person really good to do lots of writing for a while. But then we're in this little space and one person doing a lot of writing has an effect. And so it's just then to do it somewhere privately that you're not really seen or heard without feeling that you need to feel guilty or anything. So we really trust your sincerity to experiment. So it's not, I don't think it's necessarily possible to know in advance always, is that going to be good writing or bad writing? And even to feel that setup in myself, is it good or bad? And feel how it's based on fear. And just more that we're trusting each other's sincerity, our own sincerity. Like my best guess without getting tangled in knots is, yeah, I'm going to take notes today during the Dharma talk. And as I'm taking notes, I'm going to feel how it's different every single time I put the pen to the paper. And that's part of the practice. Sometimes it's more grasping and greedy. Sometimes I'm trying to look like I don't need to take notes or whatever, all the things that happen. So the last part and maybe most important part is we live in the mainstream culture is so much based, is so made of words. And to be in a space where there's the possibility of, and today you've had a lot of words coming from up here, and I apologize. It happens on the first day. But to kind of immersion in a situation that's not actually based on words. So there are words, but hopefully the words start to be more and more like a bit of salt in the soup rather than the food. And there's some other food that's going on. Hopefully more than one other kind. And a lot of it is your own food that you've already grown and you get to taste it for the first time maybe, or it feels like that, that's part of the freshness. So leaving room for all of that, I'm directing to you, but it's actually to everyone. So thanks for the question, that's really helpful. I hope, is that helpful or do you feel more comfortable? Is there anyone else who wants to say anything? I would like to ask you a question. What do you think makes the difference between being happy and being unhappy for you, first of all, the broadest kind of question. And maybe just, if anything just comes in your gut.
For me, if I'm not thinking too much, I'm happy. Then thoughts are coming, so I'm not happy.
Okay. Could you hear? Yeah?
No, we didn't hear.
You couldn't. Okay. So she's saying, when I'm not thinking so much, when I'm not thinking too much, I feel happy. And when thoughts are coming more, I feel unhappy. We'll go into it a little more, but any other thoughts about
appreciating? I'm appreciated, I'm happy.
If you feel appreciated.
Yes.
Yes. Okay. So if I feel appreciated, I feel happy. Okay. What's appreciated in Hebrew?
Morach.
Morach. Anyone else? Yes.
I'm happy when I'm loved.
When you're loved?
Or when I feel loved.
Yep, good. Can you feel the difference between the two, when I'm loved and when I feel loved?
In a certain sense, they're the same, because I can only feel loved. There's no meaning.
It has no meaning, sorry, what? Good. Okay. That's a good. I think we can go into all of these more.
Mm-hmm. I'm unhappy when I'm pushing or being pushed. When I find myself manipulating or being manipulated.
Cool. Okay. Could you hear? No. So also, it's just fun. I hope you don't feel anything bad, but it's fun to notice how the mind formulates the answer. So in this case, I feel unhappy when, and that's interesting. I feel unhappy when I'm pushing or being pushed. I feel unhappy when I'm manipulating to get something, did you say, or just manipulating?
Manipulating or being manipulated.
Or being manipulated. Anyone else?
I'm happy when I have, or I feel I have freedom of choice.
Okay. Okay. Could you hear? Yes? No? I feel happy when I feel I have the freedom to choose.
I feel very, very happy when I manage to act and facing a difficult situation and I feel my strength and courage when I act.
Cool. Could you hear? Oh, sounded strong voice. She says, I feel very, very happy when I face a very difficult situation. I feel my courage and strength. I'm happy when I act. Yeah? Did I get it?
You got it. Perfect.
Okay. Any other?
Feeling enough.
Feeling enough. Mm-hmm. So I feel happy when I feel enough, kind of thing.
I feel happy when I feel free.
Free.
Free. And also when I feel in conversation.
Mm-hmm.
In touch, sure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So she's saying, I feel happy when I feel free. And also, I feel happy when I feel in conversation, meaning in touch. Yeah? Okay. I'd like to ask another question also. If the situation is the same, what can make the difference to be happy or unhappy, or happy or unhappy in the same situation? And here, maybe we could also feel free to change the word happy to something else that you prefer, and unhappy. So it could be like, I feel, instead of happy, you prefer to say free or clear or whatever. But I'm going to just keep as simple as I can. Same situation, what makes a difference to be happy or unhappy, do you think?
An open mind or a closed mind, or open body or a closed.
So open mind, open body, closed body. I want to stick with this a little bit. Can you say more, like in your experience, or even if any example happens to come to mind that you wouldn't mind sharing, of how it is when there's open body, open mind?
What comes to mind is watching television.
Okay, good.
It can be dull and lonely, and then at another time, enjoying it and feeling calm and having a good time.
Yes.
The same program.
Yes. And could you describe anything of what it's like when you feel that openness?
More loose in the body, freer breathing, more relaxed, being in a comfortable position.
And how does that, so if it's this, but it's the same program, the same thing you're sitting on, but in the openness, does the body do something different? So relaxing and loosening, and it
more aware of.
Okay.
More awareness about the body.
Okay. But more awareness about the body doesn't always sound like good news, but your description makes it sound good. Yes. Good. It's something that we can play with a lot here, where hopefully there's not too much exciting going on this week. We can play with this sense that you gave of when there's open mind, open body, there's a loosening, a relaxing, and there's more awareness, and that's all part of the body being more comfortable. More awareness of the body, depending on the kind of awareness, isn't always so pleasant. But the way you're describing, there's a coming into awareness of more, the awareness has more capacity, and it's more pleasant. And this is something that there's a nun who was a student of Buddha alive at the time of his lifetime, Dhammadinna. And she also talks about how being aware of things that we at first would experience as neutral, which means basically we wouldn't really notice them. As we come into awareness with things that were before neutral, they are pleasant. There's a shift in the experience. That it's a Buddhist nun from thousands of years ago talking about your experience watching television. Mm-hmm. Good. Okay, thank you. Yes, please. You wanted to ask.
For me, it's the same answer as before. If I experience the situation, or I think about the situation, mm-hmm. it's a bit the same. Mm-hmm. So even if it's a difficult situation, if I experience it, or start thinking about it, it makes a big difference. Mm.
And what makes the difference? Can you feel when it goes into thinking, why would it go into thinking if it's unpleasant?
Because then the mind comes and it doesn't like the situation and starts to resist.
But who calls the mind? I'm asking all of us. Could you hear so far what she's saying? No. So she's saying it's a similar answer as to what she gave before, but she can put it in different words, that happy would be when she's more experiencing, and unhappy would be when she's thinking the situation. So the difference between thinking a situation and experiencing it. And I'm asking then, why is it that we, so not only you, but why is it that we ask the mind to come in and make our lives miserable? Like, or who or what? What is that mechanism or trigger that brings on a way of living that doesn't work so well? What comes before the mind takes over?
I think now that maybe the mind, there is this illusion that maybe the mind comes and comforts me. Try to say it's not so bad. So I'm looking for the mind to comfort me, mm-hmm. but it doesn't.
Yeah, good. Mm. Good. So sometimes that kind of simple revelation, I'm looking for the mind to comfort me, but it actually doesn't. Even if we could read that, we could have read that a million times, but when you say it out loud, you realize it, there could be like little movements in the body that are worth giving room for. It can be a simple realization that may need a few hours to really come really into your system and into a realignment. And then we may find another layer of why do we call upon the mind to comfort us? And why didn't I notice that it's not comforting? Why didn't I notice that I was looking for comfort in the wrong and also in the wrong place, etc.? It can be good to have a rhythm where we let things kind of spread throughout the system, a realization spread throughout the system, and then also not take that as an end, but then another may come. Anyone else? Yes.
It also gives you a sense or an illusion of control that you can actually manage things and plan them, and also a sense of meaning, create meaning in a meaningless existence, and also a sense of order and harmony and beauty. Troubling as it is, yet.
Yeah, the thinking.
The thinking.
Yeah, okay. So the interesting word control, and it then, okay, what is it actually? It wants to control, it thinks it controls, we want to control. Why do we want to control?
The fear of death.
Because we're afraid of dying, okay. Mm. We feel unsafe, okay. Could be. And then meaning or meaninglessness. And then this is another, we can have a lot of questions about control and do we want it and what is it and do we have it and does anyone have it and would it be good if anyone had it, etc. And also about meaning. Do we have it? Does it exist?
Sometimes.
Do we want it, etc.
Sometimes.
And sometimes we want control, actually. Like we want control of the car. And sometimes we want meaning. And sometimes there might be a sense that we want to face, is there meaninglessness or is there something deeper than meaning, than the thought,
that's not
the
so
thinking
much
meaning?
About thinking, it's more spiritual thing.
Yeah. So, but if our habit is to turn on the thinking mind for meaning, sometimes it's like junk food.
Totally.
And then we forget that any other way of eating exists.
No, it's a straight way to suicide.
I would say it's a little quicker than suicide because we don't even notice that we're dead because our body is still alive.
We notice, but what can we do? The technique is to be revealed to us.
Okay, there was another hand. Yes, please. Yes.
For me, the difference is trust.
Trust.
When I'm trusting that this is the right thing, that this is what should be, that this is a part maybe of a bigger unfolding that I'm not aware of, and I trust this unfolding, then I'm much happier about anything that happens.
Mm.
And when I don't feel this trust, then I feel I need to control. And then my mind comes in because I feel like I'm alone. I don't trust anything. I need to guide things in the direction that I want.
Mm.
And then something happens and I'm unhappy about it. I don't trust that this is what should have happened. Something else should have happened.
Yeah. Yeah. Good. So we're on dangerous ground now, but I fully agree also with what you're saying. But it can be really tricky in a negative way to hear the words that when I trust that I'm in the right situation, then I'm happy. And this comes to now choices and action. So sometimes, but that's not what you're saying. That's not all you said. I'm not saying that that's what you said. But we could easily go away and think, oh, Jaya said, I just need to trust I'm in the right situation. So like the word control, I think there's so many questions and approaches and aspects to it. The word trust, I think, would be a good companion. So if we think of trust as being okay with not being in control, but there's something a lot in conversation, there's something still in conversation. It's not just like, whatever, I'm trusting. So I'm really finally listening and I'm also responsive. So I'm in conversation, that's a really nice phrase. And so choices and action are still allowed to happen. But they're happening not from a sense that I have this problem that I've got to deal with. They're happening from a sense of some kind of deeper, maybe underlying sense of potential or workability. Like we can work with this. Whatever, and maybe whatever may happen doesn't destroy the most important thing, which I would call a kind of utter safety. So one way I wanted to talk about this is with the words conditional and unconditional. First, using the words really loosely. So when Ram was saying he feels unhappy when he feels he's pushing or being pushed, or he's manipulating or being manipulated. Manipulating to get something or being manipulated to get something. There were also, it's really easy to feel, I think each one of us in the room somewhere would find some kind of programmed, we could say manipulation or pushiness. And we can hear it. We can hear the sweetness and also the openness and potential in it when I say, I feel happy when I feel loved. But I could then be going around trying to make you make me feel loved. And then we've lost track of love. So I think some our conditioning would have us kind of living at a distance from and then doing some business. How do you like to be shown that you're loved? Well, I do. I need this. You need that. Okay, let's trade. What makes you have the impression that you have choice? What makes you have the impression that you're acting appropriately and powerfully? What are the signs of freedom that your system recognizes? What are the signs of love that your system accepts? Etc. So finding it can be helpful, not as a main task on the retreat, but more effectively as a back burner side dish kind of thing, what might sound like the most important thing, what is that like deep agenda that you carry and are pushed around by, that you long to feel what? Let's say loved or belonging or free or powerful or respected or successful or home or okay. And what are the signs of that that your system acknowledges, is willing to eat, to take in and go for a while, I felt so loved. I felt so at home. I felt so free. I felt so powerful. I knew for a while that I was successful. I knew for a while that I was respected. So getting to know both that kind of what I would consider maybe sort of a burnt earth inside, a deep place of woundedness, but also our susceptibility, our soft spot. And then, of course, our defense system. Our defense system. And how that could be considered living. That I'm kind of going around where I deeply believe that I'm not loved. I long to feel loved. Sometimes I do feel loved. And I have all this equipment that's trying to make sure you don't know that I don't feel loved, or that you do know that I don't feel loved and you have to make me feel loved, or whatever thing. Probably I have a bunch of different machines, and sometimes I use this one and sometimes that one. Sometimes I demand that because I like whatever, macaroni, that's the thing that makes me feel loved, then you have to make me macaroni because I had a hard day. Or you have to leave me alone, and that'll do it for me, or whatever. But it's sort of living via machinery, via manipulation, or via conditions, via the conditioned. And I think there's no problem, because we do live in conditions, there's no problem necessarily in living the conditioned life that we live. But if our longing for the unconditioned and our longing for unconditional love is happening through a transaction or a manipulation of conditions. So the longing for unconditional freedom or love or whatever, the thing that you answered my question. What's the difference between happy and unhappy? I'm reviewing. So feel sometime, maybe today, what is your longing for? And you might not feel it as a longing. It might be really hidden away, or it might be really quiet. It might be so familiar that you've stopped listening. But really what your life is organized around and your psyche is organized around. And it's usually something around this paradox of being human, where we are utterly interdependent and independent. So something more along the lines of choice and acting, and something more along the lines of being in connection or being loved. Belonging. And usually we have this little tiny hole somewhere that we could receive the feeling of being loved or being free or whatever. And it's like so barricaded. And we feel it bigger than we show it, usually. Sometimes the opposite. And we go around with this. So, some kind of, I would say, some kind of true pull to know reality, to know, to experience directly the unconditioned, to experience, to know what is. So some kind of longing for the unconditioned that maybe on its way through our psyche picks up some kind of more personality level of longing for unconditional love or freedom or power. And it lands in our conditions. We try to manipulate our situation to make us feel loved or free or whatever. So our usual way of going about our path is more like gardening with chemicals. We want to get rid of some things that are bad so that we can have more of what we think is good. And sometimes it is so helpful, and we can have an agreement with a friend. When I'm really down, call me or listen to me or touch my shoulder. We can work with conditions in a friendly way. I'm not saying that we should somehow go through the path untouched. The path to the unconditioned is conditioned. It is just made of conditions. That's what it is. But what are the conditions that serve the kind of movement towards experiencing what is true or what is unconditioned? What is not just my version of reality? So I think we need to give some room for inside, where there might be these really strong forces and hurts that easily feel like we're missing something important. I'm lacking freedom, I'm lacking power of choice, I'm lacking love, is an experience somewhere inside. And so naturally we move towards trying to make a situation where we could hope to experience what we're lacking, to get what we're missing. But inside us, we have this yes-no relationship to what we need. We want love and we block it. We want peace and we block it. There's an interference that goes on. And on a more subtle level, there's a pull or longing or a sense of kind of matching or rhyming with the unconditioned. Not that we expect anybody to act that out for us. We just have a sense that there's something more, something bigger than what we could think or know, or even something bigger than what could even fit in our experience. We have some kind of sense of something bigger, something that can't be manipulated, something that can't be pushed or pushy. So I would suggest if we could leave maybe way more room for that more subtle pull to, I don't like the word truth, but let's say truth, to something that's not a personal version of reality. Something beyond what's already known and experienced. Something bigger. So leaving room for where we may already experience that just here and now. So yes, we feel the breath. And in and through the breath, in the midst of feeling the breath, not blocking out, leaving room for the sense of something mysterious or more than just the mechanics, just the temperature, just the symptoms. And we can leave a really open question. Sometimes we might be imagining, we might be wishing, we might be making something up. We might be making up, have a version in our mind of the bigness, the big mystery of life. But maybe if we leave just enough room, which means way more room than we usually leave, to feel each in our own way, just in now. In any condition, in every condition, in any texture, in any temperature, in any movement. There's sort of the thing itself and the way it sort of whispers of something more or beyond or untamable, ungraspable. And I think there we may feel a sense of meaning that's not something we could think about. We may feel a sense of loved. That still, we still need to address that area that feels unloved no matter what, no matter what anybody does. But there is also an experience that is like feeling loved. It's like feeling powerful. It's like feeling effective and courageous and free. It's so subtle and so kind of here. And we don't need to make it up or make it happen. And so we easily dismiss the whole thing. So we'll continue more over the week with the subject of conditioned and unconditioned. But I just want to suggest that for now, what about we go more from the, let's say, bottom up, rather than top down. So rather than trying to first figure out the mind and why it does what it does and get it to sit over there in the corner, and then we go to the heart and feel all the feelings and hurts and reactions and histories and so on, and then that tender heart allows us to go down to the belly where it's more unknown, less language, but also a lot of knots that want to get untangled. If we could actually go way all the way down to the bottom where there is some already some sense of pull or rhyming or matching with whatever is the deepest that there is. That is also the deepest that this is, that's in. And let's just find what happens coming from down up instead of up down. And if it happens that you kind of fall into a sense of being in touch with subtle, deep reality, even, okay, there's the breath, or there's even the pain in my knee, or there's an unexpected sound. But it's not just about what I think it's about. There's more. And I leave room for the more, and I let it, you know, if there's sort of fog in the air and we can feel it on the skin, like let it come, let it touch you. We may find another approach with that really hard to get to a place that doesn't feel loved, that wants to feel loved, that blocks feeling loved, or whatever word. We might find some completely other way with the thinking mind, with the control freak, etc. So what about 80-90% of your energy and inspiration could be towards letting yourself experiment and find, figure out through experimentation, what is more likely to allow you to fall into contact with the sense of something, there's something bigger going on. That's subtle, it's easy to lose track of, it's easy for the mind to dismiss, that's nothing. The pain in my knee is much stronger. The pain in my heart is much stronger, etc. Yeah, it is much stronger. Remembering that argument last week is much stronger, yes, it's true. But so that's why it's a practice. To give a chance to fall in touch with something more subtle that's not that easy to stay with. To invite ourselves in there and to stay. As a main inspiration, 90%. And then 10% of 6 days leaves plenty of room for all those lists to do and to remember and to worry about and figure out, etc. So especially on retreat, it can be easy to be watching yourself and get all tangled up in being overly self-conscious. And so then just noticing that in the body and then, okay, well, but still I feel my feet on the ground. Okay. I feel my feet on the ground. There's that sensation of the feet on the ground. I feel it really clearly, and it's also ungraspable. That's all. It may or may not mean anything, I don't know, but being in it, 100%, you could say. So unconditionally, loosely speaking, with my feet on the ground. With my feet on the ground, or with the sound of the airplane, whatever. So here's the sound of the airplane. Using the word loosely, unconditionally, just, okay, there's the sound. So to me, it's another way of talking about the word trust versus control. Unconditionally, the sound of the airplane. And it kind of breathes. Or it sounds become a symphony or whatever. It's a different world. Or when we're conditionally, yeah, but I don't like the airplane, and maybe that means something. Maybe it means something according to my hurts, my triggers. Thank you so much for listening and also speaking, participating in all the ways that you have. Please enjoy your meal.